Welcome back, everyone. It is now 10:07 here at WCCO. I'm your host tonight, Geralyn Steele. The name of the show is Steele Talking, but because my son and I have such a great time, it's been about 16 or 17 years now that we've been working together for the Mom and Michael Hour, and he's here with us tonight. Hi, Michael.
Well, hello. You know, it's funny. I think, is it 16? I think it's been 13, 14, but who's counting? Who's counting?
No, I'm counting. What's wrong? Am I wrong? Did I skip something? Huh?
No, I think it's been 13 or 14 years, but you know what?
Are you trying to say I'm forgetting things? What are you trying to say?
No, I didn't say that. You said that.
I asked the question. I didn't say that. I asked the question. And Jonathan, do not chime in, okay? Okay, there you go.
Sorry, as Michael's attorney, I must object to the court. My client has nothing to say on this matter.
Nothing to say on this matter. Plead the fifth.
Well, nothing the attorney should shut up. There you go.
Yeah. Exactly.
Hey, Michael, we talked about Black Adam last time, and we didn't really get to put much into it, but I've been hearing that people love this piece. And when you and I talked, you were saying, oh, you know, it was good, Mom. It was really good. But, you know, I don't know. There's been talk on both sides, but I think it's doing really well. Am I right?
It's doing exceptionally well. And now that we have a bit more time, I want to go back to the first thing I was saying about Black Adam, which was the Rotten Tomato score, because I think last weekend and today, it still tells the story of what the conversation is around this movie. So Black Adam starring The Rock, of course, came out last weekend, was a really, really strong opening. Actually, The Rock's biggest opening for a film that doesn't have him in an ensemble. Of course, he's in all the Fast and Furious films, even Hobbs and Shaw. He's been in a bunch of movies with him and like other big stars, but just him as the lead, this was his biggest opening to date. But back to Rotten Tomatoes. The tomato meter, which is the score of all the official critics that contribute to Rotten Tomatoes, is 39%, which means mostly rotten. They hated this movie. The audience score, which of course is the score of those that contribute who are people who have just seen the film, everyday people, is 90%. Now, this happens sometimes with big films that usually with tentpole films, you know, where they're really meant to be a crowd pleaser, where critics won't like it too much, but audiences will give it, you know, 70, 75. But to see that huge of a delta, that huge of a disparity from 39% critics to 90% audience tells the story, because that's the truth of the matter. Is this film technically good? No. Is the acting technically great? No. Is the writing, the character, are any of the elements that would normally culminate into a compelling, good movie there? Not in a hugely strong way, no. But for some reason, the end result of this often contrived superhero film is this wonderfully fun experience. I enjoyed it from beginning to end. It is an absolute blast. The visual effects are amazing. The Rock is great. He's hilarious. The characters are likable.
Who?
The story
Who
is compelling.
Was that last name? Who did you
the,
say?
The Rock, Dwayne Johnson.
Oh, The Rock. I'm sorry. I thought you said Barack.
No. I mean, that would make the film even better.
Right.
But, so it's really fun. And I went to go see it with Joey and one other friend. And we all went in going, well, this is going to be terrible, but let's go see it, because we finally have a big budget film to go see in theaters on a big screen in a big comfortable seat. And at the end, we all leaned forward and went, I didn't hate that. Like, you, no, I didn't either. In fact, I think we liked it. I liked it too. Everyone in the theater was like, we applauded at the end. It is really fun. So as I said before last time, as a critic, ignore the critics, because they are largely wrong. If you like superhero films, whether that be DC or Marvel, you're going to enjoy this film. And again, DC superhero movies have historically been terrible. There's only been about two good ones. And this is a spinoff. This is a spinoff from Shazam, which is one of the two good ones that they have made. So I'm not surprised it's still top of the box office this weekend. If you haven't seen it, check it out.
Yeah, and you know, it's grossed about $250 million, but here's the question. If it cost somewhere in the range, I think their budget was $195 to $200 million. Do I have that right? I think that's what it is, 195 to 200 million. So if they made $250 million, are they in the hole? Or, I mean, they've got a little bit, you know, to hold on to, but not much.
They're in the hole. So, you know, about half of box office receipts are going to the theaters themselves who are putting the film in theaters and who are displaying it. And of course, the, as I always talk about with you, the P&A, the advertising budget is going to be enormous on a film like this. And this film was everywhere. I mean, they really pushed this one. So on a film with a budget this high, you can assume that the advertising budget was in some cases half of the production budget. So no, they're going to need to make about, you know, three plus times their production budget to actually make a profit on this. But what I just described to you is the old school model where films would make most of their money in theaters. But of course, now with streaming and people still watching content at home, the ROI on a film like this isn't always just box office receipts. It can also be how many eyeballs it draws to a streaming service. How many more people sign up for HBO Max just to go see this film and to watch it at home with their family as opposed to seeing it in theaters. That can be more of a long-term ROI than just a person in a seat in a theater if they sign up for HBO Max and sustain that long term.
Yeah, you know, there have been articles written about young people not, you know, into all the streaming as much as they were, of course, during the pandemic and the year after. But, you know, they're saying that some of them are just saying, nope, too much, I'm ready to do something else. Are you hearing that as well in California?
Not at all. And I would love to hear where those people feel like young people are going, because of course young people are on TikTok and in some cases Instagram, rarely Facebook, rarely Twitter. It's usually those newer social platforms. But the shows that young people are watching aren't on broadcast television still. So if they aren't streaming, then they're doing something else where the content on streamers is still being advertised. Okay. So if you're on TikTok and that's where you watch most of your content, every streamer, every studio in town is pointing marketing dollars towards you to make sure that you go back to that streamer and watch, you know, one of their new shows coming out. So at the end of the day, when they are watching long form content, it is on a streamer.
Okay. So I think China owns TikTok, right? Am I wrong?
It's a question that I'm still, because they did, and then Trump was like, you have to get rid of it. And then Biden was like, yeah, you have to give it to us. And then Microsoft was going to buy it. But then I heard that they were buying it, but then China would still own it. So now I'm completely confused as to who owns it and who owns all the data and all the faces that TikTok has collected over time. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm reading about that. It says ByteDance or BitDance, B-Y-T-E. The news
it'd be eventually... Byte is B-Y-T-E, yep. So it's ByteDance.
I know that. Ah, okay, so the news aggregator eventually became ByteDance. Byte. And now valued at around $360 billion, according to PitchBook, and owns TikTok. Its Chinese sister app, Douyin, and various education and enterprise software ventures. So that's back in late September of 2022. Okay, so it still doesn't really say that China owns it.
So it says the article I'm looking at is that ByteDance is Beijing-based, so I'm assuming that it's still under Chinese control.
Control, right.
And right, sorry to interrupt, that's the key question, because the last thing that I heard was that Microsoft or some other U.S. company would purchase the company, but that ByteDance would still retain rights to access the data that they already have. There was some split between control versus data ownership versus, you know, legal access to IP. And that's where I'm really confused, because there's nuances to this deal that I think either aren't being discussed or are more likely. I just haven't dove deep enough into this to learn exactly what's happening with ByteDance and with Microsoft TikTok.
So I found a Reuters article from last year, from last September, and the headline is Microsoft CEO says, failed TikTok deal, strangest thing I've worked on. So that unless they restarted it, the deal that Microsoft was making to buy it failed.
Mm-hmm. But then, so then you have two presidents both saying that we can't have a Chinese company having that kind of access to data, and having all of our youth on the app. So I'm obviously too late, yes, but I'm still wondering then what is the action here? What happened? Is it just China's just going to keep learning all of our faces, or what's going to happen? So this is obviously a thing I need to dig into more and learn more about where we are in this challenge.
Yeah, there's been some concerns about TikTok since its inception. And now they're saying that they are, you know, misusing in some ways. That's not the words that's in the article, but, you know, that's what I'm saying. Misusing some of the access that they have to the to our country. And my concern is, what does that mean for us? And I haven't seen an article yet. Have you, Jonathan, that says, okay, what that means to Americans when someone is taking over your content and following you, knowing more about you?
I mean, there have got to be tons of them out there. I haven't stumbled across any, but that's one of the big things that not just with TikTok, but Meta, with Facebook and with Snapchat, Instagram, this whole thing with Elon Musk and now him purchasing Twitter, there's all
finally
this this skepticism and this fear and this anxiety that anything that has a big technological footprint, a big social media footprint, is doing more than just selling your information to these companies that will send you ads based on what you look up on Google.
No, I disagree. I think Americans are very, very clear that these apps and the corporations behind them steal every ounce of our data that they possibly can and use it for whatever their needs. I mean, Snowden is still in exile,
right?
Because he told us exactly what the NSA was doing, spying on us through everything, our cameras, our microphones, and no one reacted. So America, we're clear. Oh, you're going to spy on all of our things and have all of our data, but as long as it's American, I guess we don't care. Weird. But when it's a foreign entity, then suddenly we have an issue with it.
I think that you can be aware of it and you can have a sense of, well, there's really nothing I can do about it other than maybe leave the services. So I think there's still an anxiety there with some people, not everybody, but some people. I think there's still an anxiety, and I think that's why you've seen declines in some of those apparatuses. That's why you've looked at Twitter and Elon Musk overpaid for it. You know, they're saying that he well overpaid for the value of that company. And I think that's because they're looking at people that are skeptical of the whole thing and basically leaving it behind or not checking in on what they have out there. And so when you're not checking in on it, you don't have as much ad revenue coming in. You don't have as much ad connection to all the people that are using it more on a regular basis.
Yeah, but
so he was saying that sorry, go ahead, Mom.
No, you go ahead, honey.
I was going to say Elon Musk in part overpaid because he didn't have the full truth of how many bots were on Twitter. I believe that was one of the things he was saying. But
right,
people leaving Twitter is more of a difference in how people of different ages use social media than it is people leaving because they're scared or skeptical. We've still seen Twitter being at the center point of uprising and change in various countries around the world, and of course here in America in 2020. So it still has power, but it's just not used in the same way as, let's say, TikTok, where young people are there exercising social media in a way that you simply cannot physically do on Twitter. So the shift is because of how one can interact with the content, because of how younger people are interacting with social media. It's not a young person saying, I'm skeptical of Twitter, therefore I'll go to Facebook's other company, Instagram, instead of going to Meta, and I won't text somebody, but I'll use WhatsApp, even though Facebook owns that too. So it's all really, it's the same few companies involved. It's just youth and interaction shifting.
Yeah, I read not long ago that, he had to, you know, just bite the dust and do the $44 billion. And people are going, oh, it shouldn't even cost that much. Or if it's going to cost that much, that's ridiculous. Here's the thing. We have a trillionaire, which means 1,000 billionaires. I mean, $1,000 billion, 1,000 of them, 1,000 billion. 44 is not going to touch the man. It's just not going to touch him. So I don't know why we look at that and go, man, that's a lot of money. Yeah, but it's not a lot of money for him. for Elon Musk?
Well, I feel like the contrarian in this conversation, but I have to point to information here. So according to Forbes' most recent list as of today, he's worth $223.8 billion. And I can tell you, when he first made the bid to buy Twitter, he actually did have to get outside financing, because even if he would have to liquidate all of his equities to actually have the cash to pay for it. So he did have to take financing to make it happen. So not quite a trillionaire, but yes, of course, one of the richest people on the planet, so he can do it.
I thought he was the only trillionaire, so I guess I'm wrong. I thought he was. I got to look that up. So we got to take a break, Michael, and I'm going to look it up and we'll see what it says. We'll be back. It is now 1027 here at WCCO. Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to the Mom and Michael Hour right here on WCCO Radio. Of course, Jonathan Lowe is the other voice. He's my producer. And with him and Michael and I joining, it's just been so much fun. I do want to say, Michael, to both you and Jonathan, that among all the millionaires in the world, they collectively have $158.3 trillion, but not one single person comes close to that net worth. And the combined total of all wealth of the world's 2,755 billionaires comes to nearly $14 trillion. So, wow. You know, I seriously, they have been saying for the longest that Elon Musk will be, you know, the first trillionaire. He's on that path to be the first trillionaire. But right now, there are no trillionaires on the planet in 2022. I find that remarkable.
But you said that as if I didn't say that.
No. You did say that. No, you. In fact, you and Jonathan both said something about that. I'm just saying for my clarity, because I really thought he was a lot closer to that. In fact, I thought he had actually hit the mark, and I was completely wrong. So forgive me.
I do. And I want to just highlight that was a beautiful apology, and you gave amazing context and facts, but you still didn't say that I was right. Because I know that's
right.
Hard part.
You were right.
Oh, she said it.
You were so right. Oh, my goodness. Did you know that you were right?
Apparently, I was. I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you know, great. I kept thinking
nothing
about
like
it,
hearing your mother say, nothing like hearing your mom say that you're right. Just, you know. Thank you.
How often does that happen? All the time.
All the time.
I think you're right most of the time.
But
what more
it
do you want from me? What more? I'm sorry, what more? Do you want?
Nothing more. You are a perfect mother. I need nothing else.
See, Jonathan. See? Oh, my God. There's no such thing as a perfect mom. I'm just perfect for you.
So,
and you're perfect for me. I mean, I have the two children that I'm really grateful I have. I'm so grateful.
I'm real grateful to you. It sounds like I don't need my lawyer, Jonathan, anymore, so I can dismiss him from the job.
Fired. There you go.
Everything smoothed out. Like,
how dare you? You'll be receiving a bill, sir.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
Yeah. So no one's closer to a trillion than Elon Musk. And I must say, I think it's going to be a mess, you know, with him. What was with the sink? Was that a toilet sink or something he brought in?
I ignore him generally. I don't know.
Okay.
Although I will tell you, you know, speaking of the Forbes list, I could be on that list next year because the Powerball is at $1 billion. So, you know, who knows? Somebody tomorrow could make the Forbes list. Actually, they would not after taxes. But for the sake of this story, Powerball's at $1 billion. Someone could win $1 billion tomorrow. We'll see what happens.
All right, then we got to take a break and do some weather, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to the Mom and Michael Hour here on Steel Talkin' at WCCO Radio. It is now 10:39. I'm your host, Geraldine Steele, and we've got to keep this going. My son, Michael, is joining us from California. Welcome back, son. It's always great to have you.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Okay, so here's the thing. The election is coming up, and I am trying to figure out the ways that I can convince the young people in my life to vote. And I'm just curious, what would you say to someone even younger than you, maybe some of your cousins who are in their 20s, but not in their 30s yet, and convince them how important it is and that they should vote?
So, Lord of the Rings, the third film, Return of the King, the steward of Gondor, which is the old dude with the big black cloak, when the armies of Mordor first show up at the White Tower, right, he sees the armies and how huge they are and tens of thousands and freaks out because he's an insane person. And he goes to his people who are all standing on the edge of the castle and he goes, "Fear for your lives! Fear for your death!" I would say that. I would just hire that actor to do the same thing just on TV and then just be like, go vote, paid for by the Michael Battle. That's all.
Yeah, but see, the fear is my problem. You know, when you scare people into voting your way, I don't think that's worth trying. And it works often. You know, if people are scared, they're going to vote for those who are scaring them, right? And they may not be the ones you want that can fix things and move things up and forward. That's my challenge. How do we address that today? Because that's a real issue with this coming up election. I mean, the 31st is tomorrow. Halloween is tomorrow. And I can just imagine you've been thinking about, oh, am I going to get involved in Halloween? Am I not? I know you and I have already talked about that. But on my mind today is, how do I contact everyone in my contacts, right? And say to them, okay, if you're in the United States, you got to vote. You have to vote. And to make sure they know why I keep saying that.
I don't know. And first of all, I will say, I was kidding about that guy. But if I did that, I didn't say what to be afraid of. It was just general fear because both sides of the aisle think that the other person is going to ruin the world. So, you know, fear will get everyone out to vote, which, you know, what is better than nothing. But really, to the core of your question, I don't know. I don't want to say I have given up. I just can no longer wrap my head around not voting. But to your point, there are obviously a lot of people, a lot of young people, who might not turn out for this election, as happens in every midterm. There are tons of people who don't vote in a midterm election. And I don't know. No one has figured out how to fix that problem in a midterm. And the turnout in the last general was so enormous. I would hope that some of that would carry forward, but historically we've seen that that's just not the case. Interest isn't there. Apathy is higher. And you know, even though terrible things have happened, depending on who you're talking to, I don't know if it is enough to motivate people to go out there and vote. But again, I don't understand that anymore. I take my helplessness and try to do what I can to feel like it is not as hopeless as it seems, and voting seems like, you know, some sort of way to cling on to that hope, but other people don't feel that way.
Yeah, other people don't feel that way. I guess I'm just trying to figure out what is the best angle to try to get those that I love, you know, to say, hey, I'm going to vote for sure. I know most of the Steeles, most of my siblings and our children are completely on board to do that. But then the generation after that, not necessarily too much. And so I'm just curious about how you would do that. I won't stop, though. I won't stop trying. If I have to call everybody, I'm going to call everybody. Whatever I have to do to try to make sure that people know that the midterms are as important as the presidential election. It is.
Of course they
just
are.
Yeah.
Always have been. And historically, we always see this where one party wins the White House and then the midterms come through. And not every time, but more often than not, one of the houses flips and then the other party takes control and then there's a big changes. And then, you know, it, in the extreme case, a president becomes, you know, a lame duck president, if you will. I mean, obviously not until the election is actually done, but they just lose a lot of their power in the second half and then leading up to the next big election. But I don't know that there's a way around that flip. It happens almost every single time. And maybe if we were less polarized, right, I could see that being less of the case. But now we're more divided than ever before. So it seems all the more likely that every time we go through this cycle, it'll be back and forth, back and forth. I hope that it's two steps forward and one back and not two steps backwards and one more backwards like we had in 2016. I hope that each time we go through this treacherous process that is our political, primarily two-party system, that we can move a little bit forward. But I'm not sure what to tell you.
I have a question for both of you, and after you answer this, we can go to break. But when it comes to the midterm elections, does there need to be messaging out there that the people that you are voting in for Congress are more important and hold more weight than the president? Does there need to be some sort of messaging campaign to say, okay, the president is the leader of the country, but they can't technically make any laws. They can't technically move the needle and elect judges. Does there need to be a messaging to sort of take the presidency down a peg below the people in Congress, representatives, and especially the senators?
No,
because that wouldn't be true.
No.
It's quite the opposite. The president is the president. The president can do things that all of Congress cannot do. So that's still the top position, the most powerful position. If anything, I wish could get messaged, and I'll make this brief. It would be that the president cannot affect in a material way inflation. That's the head of the Federal Reserve. And just to hammer in that message that Jerome Powell is the only person and his team who can actually change inflation. It is not now, nor has it ever been, the president.
Amen.
And I guess it's kind of what I'm getting at is that the president has quite a bit of power. I'm personally not saying that the president has no power or little power, but when you're talking about lawmaking, when you're talking about ratifying laws and codifying laws, you have so many other places that you need to look at, whether it's Congress or the Supreme Court or the Federal Reserve, that have to deal with different aspects of our society and sort of make it the final word for how we treat things in society or how we change things in society. And I don't know whether that's getting across. I really don't think that's getting across in a lot of ways.
And I don't disagree, but then pivoting back to what people are seeing on the news cycle, it's Trump can ban Muslims. Trump can build the wall. Biden can cancel student loans. Obama can create health care without Congress. So, and yes, there's endless challenges in the courts to all of those things, but the point is, it's still the top position, and they do have an extreme amount of power, even if they can't get Congress on their side.
So there we have it. There we have it. So many people ask some of those questions in a way that they couldn't do it as you did it, Michael. But the bottom line is, how do we say that in their language? And I'm not talking about a foreign language, but, you know, every community has its own language. And how do we communicate to those that really may say, okay, I'm interested in hearing more, but really I don't want to go vote? Because what we've found out in the last since 2016, is that what we thought democracy was and that it was secure, it is not. Right. So I feel as though lies have been poured on all of us and our eyes are not open, whether we want them to be or not. So then how do we convince people to say, especially young people, hey, I know things are screwed up. I know this has happened. I know we didn't know that that could happen. I cannot tell you guys how often I say, so, oh my gosh, how is it that that has happened? I say that all the time to people. I thought that was illegal. I thought these people would be in jail or prison. And that's not what's happening. So that to me is one of the biggest problems that we have. And I don't know how we're going to get them out to vote. I participated in a big event yesterday and it was wonderful. And I'm just hoping that people really heard. And they had their hands up and they were clapping and screaming, saying, we're going to go vote. The young people were there. I'm just hoping that they will. There you go.
And I think that's maybe the answer. Unfortunately, it's when things don't go the way that someone wants on either side of the aisle, especially with young people. And I can think back to 2016. Obama said in a stump speech for Hillary, he said, abortion rights are on the ballot right now. the Supreme Court's on the ballot right now. Go vote because you're voting for those things. People didn't listen, and look what happened. And then with young people, of course, you know, you have people who support gun rights, but then all the school shootings keep happening. And so it's really hard to adjudicate that belief with the violence happening in your schools and not feeling safe. So unfortunately, the hard truths, the hard realities, if you don't go vote, your rights get taken away. You know what I mean? Like my right to marry my partner across the country might be taken next. That's a harsh reality of people not voting. More of that happening might hopefully get them to actually vote for what they want.
So true. And I wish we had more time, but we got to take a break and we'll be back in a moment. It is now 10:57 here at WCCO as we wrap it up tonight. This is the Mom and Michael Hour, my son joining us. Here we are looking at the future, looking at what the future could be. And I'm not quite sure of what that's going to look like. And so, Michael, I'm just curious to know, are you excited about voting?
Yeah, I'm excited to participate. I'm excited about Karen Bass's campaign here in Los Angeles. And I'm excited to see what comes next, because if we aren't moving forward, what's the point?
Exactly. So here we are. We know that we have to make this work. We know we have to do what we're supposed to do. Is it enough? I don't know, because it seems like it's starting to crumble a bit. And I do want to apologize to all of you listening tonight. We hardly ever go in this route and talk about politics and things like that. We want to make sure that you sleep well. We want to leave you with something very positive. So forgive us for that. And I know, Jonathan, with you sticking and staying with us on Sunday nights, you too have a lot on your mind and on your heart about what it means to be a part of the United States. And it's not easy to think about it, because I'm not quite sure about it. So I want to leave a thought for everyone. It says, and this is from Thought of the Week, or Thought for the Week, and it's by Reignite the Soul. And it says, we can only be said to be alive in those moments when our hearts are conscious of our treasures. Okay, that's by Thornton Wilder. How about this? Life is the greatest gift you have been given. And in return for all that it offers, life asks for your time, your talent, enthusiasm, energy, and your passion. It asks that you make the most of every minute. So today, turn off your autopilot and be fully present in each moment. Focus on the treasures you have moment to moment instead of what is missing in your life. May you find your life filled with every good thing. May you find yourself every moment of every day living a life that you love. Good night, everyone, and thank you for sticking and staying with us here at WCCO. Good night, son. Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to the Mom and Michael Hour here on Steel Talkin' at WCCO Radio. It is now 10:39. I'm your host, Geraldine Steele, and we've got to keep this going. My son, Michael, is joining us from California. Welcome back, son. It's always great to have you.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Okay, so here's the thing. The election is coming up, and I am trying to figure out the ways that I can convince the young people in my life to vote. And I'm just curious, what would you say to someone even younger than you, maybe some of your cousins who are in their 20s but not in their 30s yet, and convince them how important it is and that they should vote?
So, Lord of the Rings, the third film, Return of the King, the Steward of Gondor, which is the old dude with the big black cloak, when the armies of Mordor first show up at the White Tower, right? He sees the armies and how huge they are, and tens of thousands, and he freaks out because he's an insane person. And he goes to his people, who are all standing on the edge of the castle, and he goes, "Fear for your lives! Fear for your death!" I would say that. I would just hire that actor to do the same thing, just on TV, and then it'd just be like, go vote, paid for by Michael Battle. That's all.
Yeah, but see, the fear is my problem. You know, when you scare people into voting your way, I don't think that's worth trying. And it works often. You know, if people are scared, they're going to vote for those who are scaring them, right? And they may not be the ones you want that can fix things and move things up and forward. That's my challenge. How do we address that today? Because that's a real issue with this coming up election. I mean, the 31st is tomorrow. Halloween is tomorrow. And I can just imagine you've been thinking about, oh, am I going to get involved in Halloween? Am I not? I know you and I have already talked about that. But on my mind today is, how do I contact everyone in my contacts, right? And say to them, okay, if you're in the United States, you got to vote. You have to vote. And to make sure they know why I keep saying that.
I don't know. And first of all, I will say, I was kidding about that guy. But if I did that, I didn't say what to be afraid of. It was just general fear, because both sides of the aisle think that the other person is going to ruin the world. So, you know, fear will get everyone out to vote, which, you know, what is better than nothing? But really, to the core of your question, I don't know. I don't want to say I have given up. I just can no longer wrap my head around not voting. But to your point, there are obviously a lot of people, a lot of young people, who might not turn out for this election, as happens in every midterm. There are tons of people who don't vote in a midterm election. And I don't know. No one has figured out how to fix that problem in a midterm. And the turnout in the last general was so enormous. I would hope that some of that would carry forward. But historically, we've seen that that's just not the case. Interest isn't there. Apathy is higher. And, you know, even though terrible things have happened, depending on who you're talking to, I don't know if it is enough to motivate people to go out there and vote. But again, I don't understand that anymore. I take my helplessness and try to do what I can to feel like it is not as hopeless as it seems, and voting seems like, you know, some sort of way to cling on to that hope. But other people don't feel that way.
Yeah, other people don't feel that way. I guess I'm just trying to figure out what is the best angle to try to get those that I love, you know, to say, hey, I'm going to vote for sure. I know most of the Steeles, most of my siblings and our children are completely on board to do that. But then the generation after that, not necessarily too much. And so I'm just curious about how you would do that. I won't stop, though. I won't stop trying. If I have to call everybody, I'm going to call everybody. Whatever I have to do to try to make sure that people know that the midterms are as important as the presidential election. It is.
Of course. Always have been. And historically, we always see this, where one party wins the White House and then the midterms come through. And not every time, but more often than not, one of the houses flips. And then the other party takes control, and then there's a big changes. And then, you know, it, in the extreme case, a president becomes, you know, a lame duck president, if you will. I mean, obviously not until the election is actually done, but they just lose a lot of their power in the second half and then leading up to the next big election. But I don't know that there's a way around that flip. It happens almost every single time. And maybe if we were less polarized, right, I could see us, right, that being less of the case. But now we're more divided than ever before. So it seems all the more likely that every time we go through this cycle, it'll be back and forth, back and forth. I hope that it's two steps forward and one back, and not two steps backwards and one more backwards like we had in 2016. I hope that each time we go through this treacherous process that is our political, primarily two-party system, that we can move a little bit forward, but I'm not sure what to tell you.
I have a question for both of you, and after you answer this, we can go to break. But when it comes to the midterm elections, does there need to be messaging out there that the people that you are voting in for Congress are more important and hold more weight than the president? Does there need to be some sort of messaging campaign to say, okay, the president is the leader of the country, but they can't technically make any laws. They can't technically move the needle and elect judges. Does there need to be a messaging to sort of take the presidency down a peg below the people in Congress, representatives, and especially the senators?
No,
because that wouldn't be true.
No.
It's quite the opposite. The president is the president. The president can do things that all of Congress cannot do. So that's still the top position, the most powerful position. If anything, I wish could get messaged, and I'll make this brief. It would be that the president cannot affect in a material way inflation. That's the head of the Federal Reserve. And just to hammer in that message that Jerome Powell is the only person and his team who can actually change inflation. It is not now, nor has it ever been, the president.
Amen.
And I guess it's kind of what I'm getting at is that the president has quite a bit of power. I'm personally not saying that the president has no power or little power, but when you're talking about lawmaking, when you're talking about ratifying laws and codifying laws, you have so many other places that you need to look at, whether it's Congress or the Supreme Court or the Federal Reserve, that have to deal with different aspects of our society and sort of make it the final word for how we treat things in society or how we change things in society. And I don't know whether that's getting across. I really don't think that's getting across in a lot of ways.
And I don't disagree, but then pivoting back to what people are seeing on the news cycle, it's Trump can ban Muslims. Trump can build the wall. Biden can cancel student loans. Obama can create health care without Congress. So, and yes, there's endless challenges in the courts to all of those things. But the point is, it's still the top position, and they do have an extreme amount of power, even if they can't get Congress on their side.
So there we have it. There we have it. So many people ask some of those questions in a way that they couldn't do it as you did it, Michael. But the bottom line is, how do we say that in their language? And I'm not talking about a foreign language, but, you know, every community has its own language. And how do we communicate to those that really may say, okay, I'm interested in hearing more, but really I don't want to go vote? Because what we've found out in the last... since 2016, is that what we thought democracy was and that it was secure, it is not, right? So I feel as though lies have been poured on all of us, and our eyes are not open whether we want them to be or not. So then how do we convince people to say, especially young people, hey, I know things are screwed up. I know this has happened. I know we didn't know that that could happen. I cannot tell you guys how often I say, so, oh my gosh, how is it that that has happened? I say that all the time to people. I thought that was illegal. I thought these people would be in jail or prison. And that's not what's happening. So that to me is one of the biggest problems that we have. And I don't know how we're going to get them out to vote. I participated in a big event yesterday and it was wonderful. And I'm just hoping that people really heard. And they had their hands up and they were clapping and screaming, saying, we're going to go vote. The young people were there. I'm just hoping that they will. There you go.
And I think that's maybe the answer. Unfortunately, it's when things don't go the way that someone wants on either side of the aisle, especially with young people. And I can think back to 2016. Obama said in a stump speech for Hillary, he said, abortion rights are on the ballot right now. The Supreme Court's on the ballot right now. Go vote because you're voting for those things. People didn't listen, and look what happened. And then with young people, of course, you know, you have people who support gun rights, but then all the school shootings keep happening. And so it's really hard to adjudicate that belief with the violence happening in your schools and not feeling safe. So unfortunately, the hard truths, the hard realities. If you don't go vote, your rights get taken away. You know what I mean? Like my right to marry my partner across the country might be taken next. That's a harsh reality of people not voting. More of that happening might hopefully get them to actually vote for what they want.
So true. And I wish we had more time, but we got to take a break and we'll be back in a moment. It is now 10:57 here at WCCO as we wrap it up tonight. Per, this is the Mom and Michael Hour, my son joining us. Here we are looking at the future, looking at what the future could be. And I'm not quite sure of what that's going to look like. And so, Michael, I'm just curious to know, are you excited about voting?
Yeah, I'm excited to participate. I'm excited about Karen Bass's campaign here in Los Angeles. And I'm excited to see what comes next, because if we aren't moving forward, what's the point?
Exactly. So here we are. We know that we have to make this work. We know we have to do what we're supposed to do. Is it enough? I don't know, because it seems like it's starting to crumble a bit. And I do want to apologize to all of you listening tonight. We hardly ever go in this route and talk about politics and things like that. We want to make sure that you sleep well. We want to leave you with something very positive. So forgive us for that. And I know, Jonathan, with you sticking and staying with us on Sunday nights, you too have a lot on your mind and on your heart about what it means to be a part of the United States. And it's not easy to think about it, because I'm not quite sure about it. So I want to leave a thought for everyone. It says, and this is from Thought of the Week, or Thought for the Week, and it's by Reignite the Soul. And it says, we can only be said to be alive in those moments when our hearts are conscious of our treasures. Okay, that's by Thornton Wilder. How about this? Life is the greatest gift you have been given. And in return for all that it offers, life asks for your time, your talent, enthusiasm, energy, and your passion. It asks that you make the most of every minute. So today, turn off your autopilot and be fully present in each moment. Focus on the treasures you have moment to moment instead of what is missing in your life. May you find your life filled with every good thing. May you find yourself every moment of every day living a life that you love. Good night, everyone, and thank you for sticking and staying with us here at WCCO. Good night, son. It is now 10:57 here at WCCO as we wrap it up tonight. This is the Mom and Michael Hour, my son joining us. Here we are looking at the future, looking at what the future could be. And I'm not quite sure of what that's going to look like. And so, Michael, I'm just curious to know, are you excited about voting?
Yeah, I'm excited to participate. I'm excited about Karen Bass's campaign here in Los Angeles. And I'm excited to see what comes next, because if we aren't moving forward, what's the point?
Exactly. So here we are. We know that we have to make this work. We know we have to do what we're supposed to do. Is it enough? I don't know, because it seems like it's starting to crumble a bit. And I do want to apologize to all of you listening tonight. We hardly ever go in this route and talk about politics and things like that. We want to make sure that you sleep well. We want to leave you with something very positive. So forgive us for that. And I know, Jonathan, with you sticking and staying with us on Sunday nights, you too have a lot on your mind and on your heart about what it means to be a part of the United States. And it's not easy to think about it, because I'm not quite sure about it. So I want to leave a thought for everyone. It says, and this is from Thought of the Week, or Thought for the Week, and it's by Reignite the Soul. And it says, we can only be said to be alive in those moments when our hearts are conscious of our treasures. Okay, that's by Thornton Wilder. How about this? Life is the greatest gift you have been given. And in return for all that it offers, life asks for your time, your talent, enthusiasm, energy, and your passion. It asks that you make the most of every minute. So today, turn off your autopilot and be fully present in each moment. Focus on the treasures you have moment to moment instead of what is missing in your life. May you find your life filled with every good thing. May you find yourself every moment of every day living a life that you love. Good night, everyone, and thank you for sticking and staying with us here at WCCO. Good night, son.